Ed Lenhart, an advisor to people in the creative industry after a long career in design, is my guest. Ted is in the early stages of developing a creative co-op in Seattle for people in the creative industry. Now, PCC has been successful in creating co-ops in the food industry. BECU is the fourth largest co-op credit union in the nation. So, why not a co-op for the creative industry? It is estimated that 40% of the U.S. workforce are now freelancers and small independent contractors. But before we dive into the co-op concept, I first asked Ted, how did he get into the business he was in?
Well, I started a brand design firm in the mid-80s. We grew gradually for a few years until we began catching some larger clients. And by the end of the 90s, we were just under 50 people and producing $10 million a year in fees. So it was a pretty successful brand design practice. We had clients all over the world, Nissan, Lego, Charles Schwab, Apple, Electronic Arts, people like that.
But you hit a point in your creativity or something or along the way that you decided you wanted to do something different. How did that come about?
The 90s was a go-go time of the holding companies that owned advertising agencies and design agencies buying up creative service companies and basically building giant conglomerates. So the money, Wall Street favored that. So the money was flowing and we got an offer from a group of investors in Chicago that was basically beyond our wildest dreams. And so it wasn't really our idea, except that, you know, we all thought, my partner and I always thought that the sale of the business was the end game because we didn't have any other source of money.
It seems like the 90s were really ripe for that in terms of, let's say, in the particular agency business, they were buying up the boutique agencies right and left. It came down to there's like six or seven major advertising PR agencies in the world almost.
That has dramatically flattened out since then, and revenues are down and growth is down. So basically today, those holding companies are fighting amongst each other for market share with, you know, winners and losers announced every year because of the digital revolution.
Well, in the midst of all this, and I don't know the timetable on this, but you started an agency now that is described as helping creatives navigate today's marketplace and guide them through a brighter professional future.
I work to help individual creatives and small firms negotiate deals with clients and salaries and anything that involves money. Creatives have a very difficult time asking for money.
Well, let's first define what creatives are.
Well, I work with creative professionals, so anybody who makes their living by using their creative talents. So writers, designers, graphic designers, product designers, illustrators, photographers, strategists, marketers, even a few lawyers I've had as clients, people who find themselves in jobs that demand a lot of flexibility and creativity, people in sales and marketing. I've had quite a few of those.
What are the things beyond, let's say, negotiating money in terms, which is obviously quite big, what other things do you help creative type people do?
Well, I help them understand what their value actually, the bigger picture of how they establish their value in the world and in their relationships.
Could you give us an example of a client, let's say, you don't have to name them or something, maybe a little story of some perfect client that came to you and they said, I need your help, and they found you and what you did for them?
Young man, designer, typical actually considerable skills and experience, approached by a major corporation, take a position in-house, which is very common these days. And he was really nervous about the whole money conversation, nervous about dealing with recruiters and the HR department on the client side. And one of the things he was particularly uncomfortable with was literally asking for the money. The client made him an offer, and I could tell from the way the client was behaving that they really wanted this guy. One of the signals was that a vice president at the company, actually, who was on a business trip at the time, arranged a call with my client, arranged a call when the vice president was on a global trip, And we figured it out that he called in at midnight to have a kind of a persuasive conversation with this young man. That said to me, they really want this guy. My client was to have a meeting with the person representing the client who was going to negotiate the salary. And they had already made him an offer, and we kind of felt there was probably some more money on the table there eventually. And but he was afraid to actually ask for the amount of money that he felt he was worth. Perhaps you could say to the HR person, I know that you're a specialist in recruiting people and negotiating these deals. You have way more experience than I, but you're not familiar with design. You're not familiar with my pedigree, my work, and what I've done and the importance of it. So would it be all right with you if I kind of walked you through some of my experiences? And the young woman said, sure. And so he listed the firms he'd worked with and the client projects that he'd worked on and the success of those projects for the clients and the kind of accolades he'd gotten from various creative competitions and so on. And then he said, with that in mind, would it be possible for you to reconsider your offer? And then he went quiet, and she immediately gave him a significant bump up from what their previous offer had been.
But on the other hand, I would think that a lot of times creatives would have difficulty with reality. Is that fair?
No, that's unfair. The creatives I've worked for are very, very much dealing with the world as it is. They're just afraid because when they step outside their expertise area, they feel vulnerable.
Creative co-op, that's something you have created. Could you explain that?
Well, actually, we haven't created it. We're in the process of planning it right now. But the fundamental idea is that creatives could actually band together in a worker co-op, which is a legal description, where they actually owned the business themselves and had a say in what the business did and what kind of clients they got an opportunity to work for or not. And we are hard on the path of creating a co-op and hope to have it operational within 6 months. So we'll see.
Great. So what do you look at the future? Look at the crystal ball and tell me what the future is going to be in terms of the development of co-ops.
Well, co-ops generally are growing dramatically within the United States right now, genuinely seen as a viable alternative to Wall Street. We are seeing, you know, ever greater backlash against CEO and salaries and to supporting Wall Street as a theme. This year, 2018, when public companies report their numbers, it's now required for them to report the ratio of what CEO and senior management pay is to the lowest paid employee. So we're going to get a lot of public stories about obnoxious pay levels. And so there's a real movement that's much bigger than what I'm doing. I'm just a small part of it. Real movement towards, I would say, more fairness, more just workplace. And creatives could play, in my view, could play a dramatic role in that. There are already several creative co-ops. There's two or three in the United Kingdom. There's at least three in the United States that I know of. And they tend to be small businesses. We're hoping to be able to build something that's actually much larger. And, you know, the future, you know, the idealized future would be that the industrial giants, America's industrial giants, begin to reach out to co-ops to do their work for them and to begin to emulate the values that are, you know, focused on a healthier planet and much more fairness between those who manage and those who work.
Well, I really think you're on to something really big, and I wish you well in this journey because I think it's long overdue, and I'm glad you're picking this up on a level, and I think it's going to take off. I don't think there's any question about that.
Thank you.
If you want to find out more about Ted Lenhart, you can visit tedlenhart.com. That's Ted, L-E-O-N-H-A-R-D-T.com, all one word.
You're listening to Voices of Experience with Paul Casey. Visit voicesofexperience.com and take a 5-minute self-employment quiz. That's voicesofexperience.com. The higher you score on the quiz, the higher your prospects for success. One more time, visit voicesofexperience.com. All one word.
That's all the time we have for this edition of Voices of Experience. I would like to thank former Mayor Wes Ullman from the interview I had with him 20 years ago, Ted Lenhart, and Dr. Mark Del Picaro for sharing their wisdom and experience with us today. Next week, I'm going to play an interview I had with Joe Giacovini. I will call it the Philadelphia story because I don't believe there is a person alive who knows more about Philadelphia than he does. He has lived in Philadelphia his entire life, and has been involved in many of the milestones that have shaped Philadelphia in the last half of the 20th century and well into this century. If you want to listen to any show for the last year and a half, you can Google KKNW and then click on to Archives. At the very bottom of the page, click on to Voices of Experience. That will take you to SoundCloud, and then you can hear any show again for the last year and a half. You can listen to interviews I've had with former hosts of NPR's All Things Considered, Robert Siegel. I did a couple shows on homelessness during that time in the latter part of 2018, visited the Bread of Life Mission. So you can listen to an interview I had with Mark Victor Hansen, author of Chicken Soup for the Soul. My name is Paul Casey, your host and producer of Voices of Experience. Give me a call at 206-459-5536. If you want to talk about anything as it relates to this show, that's 206-459-5536. Have a great rest of the week.